Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am Ted Santos, and I am your host of The Creative Alchemist, and we come to you live every Thursday from 7 until 8, and it is Thursday, and it is 7 o'clock, and we are here to talk to you about your business, the business you have, the business you'd like to have, and maybe the business you should think twice about before you have it. As you know, we always have a guest, and our guests always have expertise in specific areas, and we've covered leadership and project management, and finance, accounting, even your health. And tonight, well, tonight, I would recommend you in the background have a little Bob Marley playing kind of low and sit back, relax, and don't be shy about calling in with your burning questions. You can light up our lines. The phone number is 516-387-1640. That's 516-387-1640. And before we introduce our guest, and our guest is going to talk about a pretty hot topic, somewhat, maybe very controversial, probably a lot of misunderstood. There's probably people don't have as much knowledge about this new opportunity that's happening in the U.S. and in certain states more than others. So we'll have a guest that will be able to talk about it all. Before we introduce the guest, you know I never take this journey alone. I have a co-pilot, Lori. Let them know you're in the house.
So, hi, everyone. Before I introduce myself and our guest, I'm wondering, Ted, we have a little static. I'm wondering if you want to go out and come back in again.
I'll do that.
And then, I'll introduce myself and the guest while you're popping in and out. So, hi, everybody. It's Lori Miller from LGC Interior Design, and super excited to have another night again with you. Tonight's guest is very special and a leader in a very rising field, and she's going to offer us a lot of valuable information and give us her expertise, her knowledge, and tell you what opportunities are available. So tonight, meet Robin Swan, and I'm going to let her introduce herself.
Hello, Lori.
Hi.
Is Ted back?
Yes,
okay.
Ted,
I'm Ted. Thank you so much for inviting me. Hello, Ted. I've been, you know, a fan of you, too, for a while, listening to your shows. So this morning, Ted and I were having kind of an interesting conversation. I've been in the cannabis industry for my entire life, basically. I come from a cannabis family in the Humboldt area. So through the maturation of my existence, I have learned multiple things about how cannabis is a healing plant and how it is a catalyst for other plants as well as I have had to do the deep dive into the legal conversation regarding the medicinal aspects and recreational aspects of cannabis. So that's me. And I'm an herbalist and a structural integration neuromuscular therapist.
You want to tell people the name of your company?
Oh, that's right. Oh, I have a company name. I have a couple of them. So the parent company is Firebird Touch Therapy. We became incorporated in 1996 as a compassionate use lifestyle company. And we have Blue Buddha CBD and Happy Dog Medicinals, which is our pet line. So all of our products are artisan made in small batches. They involve a variety of different plants and production techniques.
Awesome. And if they want to reach you, they can just go to Firebird.
They can go to, they can Google my name, Robin Swan. That's the fastest way to all things that are linked to us, or on Facebook and social media, either Blue Buddha CBD, Firebird Touch Therapy, or Happy Dog Medicinals. So we're kind of everywhere in the CBD and the cannabis space, which are two very separate environments but coexist like a figure eight.
And if I understand, it doesn't have to be just a happy dog. You can have a happy cat, too.
You can have a happy cat, a happy horse, a happy goat, because anything that has a central nervous system will benefit from CBD. And CBD is an acronym for cannabidiol. And it is the other side. There's two molecular strains that fall down from the cannabis plant. One is the one that we all know as THC, and the other one is CBD. So one is psychoactive and one is not. One is a restorative anti-inflammatory and one is an anti-pain, anti-cancer, anti-virus.
Awesome. So thank you. You can hear that Robin has a lot of knowledge and her expertise. I'm going to start with more of the basic questions, and then, you know, Ted and I will rapid fire at you, and you, of course, can
me apart.
Share your knowledge. So, Robin, tell us a little bit what it, how you got into this field and what it's been like starting and running this business.
So, like I said, I'm, you know, I've literally been, I've been working with cannabis since I was a little girl. My grandmother, I'm Eastern Van Cherokee, and my grandmother used to go out and collect something that she called ditch weed, which later I found out was wild hemp, land-raised hemp that just grows wild all over our country. And she would literally cut it with a machete and chop it up, and then she would mix it with wild greens and pig fat and call it the go-to-sleep salad. And then when I was a teenager, my boyfriend at the time was Colombian, and his aunties would take the stems and the roots of the plant, and they would chop it up real fine, and they would put it into an isopropyl alcohol, which is really interesting because when we make the strongest example of what the cannabis plant looks like, it's literally pulled through an ethanol extraction. So, like, we have been doing this as human beings. It's as dated back to the Ming Dynasty. And all Ayurvedic texts. The first text of cannabis as medicine is in 600 BC in the Ayurvedics.
Very cool. And I don't know if it's going to be different being a woman entrepreneur.
Very difficult. The cannabis industry is a bunch of good old boys for real and for certain. So even there's a bunch of hooey and a bunch of like, oh yeah, women in cannabis, you know, there just isn't. It's a very, very male dominated field. And it is a challenge for women on in business, just
in general.
And then you add the component of the complicated legislations and licensure mixed with the fact that you're making a living product. You know, a lot of people who come into the cannabis space with the idea like, oh, I'm going to make a topical, or oh, I'm going to make a gummy. They don't really have, they're not coming from a background of chemistry. They're not coming from a background of herbology. So the learning curve is great. And, you know, they miss the mark a lot because they just don't understand the protocol that there is in just developing a product. But then again, there's always that one that just is, you know, clear and finds the solution.
And
so it's very challenging as a woman in business to begin with and extremely challenging in the cannabis industry because they don't take you seriously.
Right. And
but can I say one more thing on that? Because it's really pertinent,
yeah.
Okay? So when cannabis kind of made its jump from recreational, I mean from medicinal to recreational, it was, as all things that are excellent in this country, picked up by the porn industry. And what presented it, you know, we all have seen those hot nug girls with their big boobs and their, you know, scantily clad bottoms presenting trays of cannabis. So this has done us a great disservice as a group of businesswomen because it has marginalized us through the patriarch and the same film that has been put on us as women for, you know, generations and generations. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Hugh Hefner.
Thank you. So, Ted, any questions?
Do you think your indigenous background gives you any advantage? Having an indigenous background is very much like a respect and honor for Mother Earth, and looking at the things that Mother Earth has given to humans, you know, to heal, to for nutrients, you know, for shelter. So do you think that gives you an advantage in on your perspective of cannabis or any other healing plant?
Well, yes and no. because I know a lot of Anglos who love plant medicine, who have no indigenous roots, who have done deep dives into studies and become phenomenal herbalists. So, you know, I am just very fortunate because it wasn't just my father's family, my grandmother on his side, but my mom, who is Yemen, Persian, Armenian, her mother was one of my greatest herbalist teachers. She's the one who would force me to make herbal remedies with her as a little girl. I mean, like literally forced me, like, no, you can't go outside and play with your cousins. We're going to make this now and you're going to help. So I think it's just how you're raised and what you're drawn to. And, you know, anybody who's willing to get quiet and connect to nature is going to have a deeper understanding of the plant people and how that giveaway that they give us, because, you know, because of them we breathe, so we're symbiotically connected to them. I think that, you know, I think why people can get their TED, I'm hopeful.
Well, you know, I'm listening to you, and what you situation you described is become somewhat obsolete, especially in the U.S., where, you know, grandma says, sit down and I'm going to show you how to work with nature for your best interest. That's not done. We get the quick fix from the pharmaceutical companies. They have a pill for everything. So the fact that you started out as a child with this understanding may give you a better advantage than you realize. And, you know, maybe I'm selling.
Well,
maybe
I agree, but I don't want to diminish anybody who, like, I mean, just because you don't have cool DNA like me and you haven't been killed by everybody for, you know, generations upon generations, doesn't mean that you cannot connect with the plant people. But, yeah,
no,
just being raised in that environment.
And passing the wisdom down, right? So there's I don't want to harp on that too much, but I just think that knowledge transfer, you know, the kind of wisdom that's passed down for generations has a lot of value that you really don't get out of the
book. I agree 100%, and I think that it's our responsibility, you know, all of us who have children and grandchildren, to pick that up, you know, and to continue to teach that and not rely on Google or the television or the pharmacy. But, you know, and I think, honestly, Ted, I believe that the collective is waking up and realizing that, you know, I mean, this is a systemic problem in our country, the pharmaceutical industry. You know, it's a bigger problem than anyone that we face. And we have become very complacent as a race of people, Americans. You know, we have done a lot of relying on big med, and look what it's done for us. Look at our fentanyl deaths.
Right.
So, but the problem is not necessarily the drug. The problem is how we live our lifestyle and what we value that drives us to a point where we need to take drugs.
Right. Exactly. So let's kind of dive into the business side of cannabis. I live in New Jersey. We have a mayor who is, I guess you could say, somewhat liberal. When he ran for his first term, everyone was saying, oh, this guy's going to be great. We're all going to be able to smoke marijuana and grow it and, you know, and sell it, and it'll all be legal. So if I'd like to get into the cannabis business in the state of New Jersey, for one, do you know if I can? And two, where do I even start?
Well, I mean, every state has its own rules and laws, right? So what have you ever looked at? What do you need to start a cannabis business in New Jersey?
No, but I'm just thinking of someone who's listening, right? So,
I mean, like, you can't, like, so I don't, you know, I imagine here's the thing that you're going to need, Ted, no matter where you are, is a whole lot of money. You need a license. Your state is going to require a license, which you must be in good standing. You're going to have to be able to comply with the fire marshal and any building regulations. I am not 100% sure on your build out, but I can speak to you on California. When you do a build out, you have to be able to pay the rent on the building for a year, because it takes at least a year to get through the licensing process to have the inspectors come in and make sure your knob is turned correctly.
Okay, so if I, all right, so let's just start with the license.
It is. Yeah.
Let's start with the license.
I'll give you two.
What are the licenses for, and are is it just one, or and does it matter which aspect of the cannabis business you're in?
So New Jersey is $1,000. It's going to cost you, in the state of New Jersey, it's going to cost you $1,000 to begin to start the process, and you're going to have at least $4,000 before you walk out the door. And every year after, your products in New Jersey need to be licensed, you know, as well as tested. So I think, you know, you and I were having this conversation, and it's really important. If you want to get into the cannabis industry, no matter what state you're in, whether you're in New Jersey or Massachusetts or Ohio, it is due diligence is the key word. So you need to, whoever you are, be able to go into, because, you know, every state is different. There's not a bottom line for how this goes about. So like in the state of California, every county is different, which makes it very confusing. And within the county, different little cities can have different rules. So due diligence is key. And understanding that the costs that you see are just the beginning costs. They're not the end line cost. And you're going to have enough material to, what are you going to do? Are you going to be a deliverer? Like, what are you going to do? So I think the first thing you need to do is have a lot of money and be willing to spend a tremendous amount of time to get your dream made, and to be very clear on what your piece in the industry is. Are you a manufacturer? Are you a distributor? Are you end line? Are you recreational? Are you medical? How much money do you have? Are you formulating your own product? Because like I said earlier, these are just like anything else that goes to market. If Mrs. Fields, you know, when she made her cookies, they had to go through an FDA regulation, and they had to be like the way that they were created, needed to be a certain way. They had to have a certain shelf life. All of those things are also on top of everything else that you have to do just to have the regulatory body to be able to make a cookie. So you have to know all that.
Okay, so
get a binder.
So if
a big one.
If I'm starting, is there you named whether I'm manufacturing, whether I'm retail, or any other aspect? Is there going to be a different license for each, depending
yes.
on how I enter
yes.
the market?
There's going to be a different license depending on whether you want to be a grower, whether you want to be a manufacturer, whether you want to be a distributor. And every state is different. Some states will let you hold multiple licenses. Other states will not.
Okay. So it sounds like the first thing I need to do is to see if I even qualify to get a license.
Well, the first thing you need to do is check your bank balance and make sure that you have a minimum, no matter what state you're in, of $50,000, even if you're in Oklahoma.
Okay.
And that you're going to be able to survive going through the licensure process, which could take, you know, up to a year or more without making any income. And then you need to see what exactly are you? What are you going to be?
Right,
and then
right.
you have to
so
find
have
your
that,
location.
Right. So if I have that, that's not a problem. Now I just need, well, the reason why I asked, should I find out if they're even going to qualify me for it? I mean, is that
Well, you're not
going
to find that out until you pay your money, period. So in most states, that's when you find out. You file your paperwork. It is non-refundable. They can say no to you.
Okay.
So in California, one piece of my paperwork was $50,000, and they could have said no and kept my 50 grand.
You're saying
so,
if I want to apply for a license, it could cost me $50,000, and I may not qualify, and it's non-refundable.
That is exactly what I am saying.
Wow.
You will have to possibly reapply, which will cost you more money. You will have to jump through whatever hoop is set up for you. You know, where you've been and what you've done matters. there's a living scan that's done when you make an application. So whatever you've done in your life, they're going to vet you and they're going to make sure that you, you know, are okay to be in the by their standard, if you can be in the cannabis industry.
Is there any way to know up front what standards they have?
Well, I mean, you can know that you better not be an arms dealer or have been a felon. You know, those things aren't going to fly. But, you know, DUIs matter, job history matters, the people you associate with, your credit score matters, how long you've been employed, if you've been employed, what you've been doing, all your taxes are up for review. It's a complete stripping of you.
That's very interesting.
But, you know, I mean,
wow.
I think, yeah, it's interesting. It's terrible, Ted. It's a shame. So this is where people come together and create collectives, which is something that, you know, they're really trying to not, you know, let happen as well, because, you know, because you can't hold every single license. You know,
can you explain what a collective is?
A collective is, so let's say all three of us have a license to infuse, all right? So that would mean that we could make topicals and edibles, mm-hmm. all right? Then, but we still had to pay $50,000, okay? But we didn't have another $100,000 to $200,000 for a build out. So we got a space collectively with a couple other folks who like to make whatever they made, and we're all paying, and this is what it costs because this model exists. It is $1,400 for 24 hours in the space, and then it is 6% of whatever revenue you send out the door in their pocket. So, you know, if your product costs you $27 to make and you sell it for 40 for 51, 6% of that is going to the house on top of the production costs that you made. And they're going to take that no matter what. And then the state of California is going to take 35%. So you've now just lost on top of, you know, just past your manufacturing costs to the point where your thing is at the door getting ready to go to the client. You are now almost 57, 55, 56% out the door on the product to taxes and overhead on top of what you're paying. So you better come with stacked ass wallets and the ability to stay. And the more you know about what you're up against and the more you have vetted your product, because you also have to be in a metric, which means that if I make a bottle that is a 1 ounce bottle or 30 cc's and I put 1,000 milligrams of whatever I put into it, I need to know and I need to test out at what it is milligrams per 10 gram, milligrams per milligram. So complicated to say. So a 1 milligram dropper would have to equal on 1,100 milligrams. And if you fail in your test, you have to go back to the beginning and retest. And every product in California costs me $1,000 to test.
That's
so crazy. So we run large batches of flour, like 250 to 300 pounds at a time, and we pull something called a crude oil. And then I test that crude oil, and that tells me how many milligrams per gram I'm working with. I have to be cleaner than organic products that you buy in the grocery stores. I have to have 0% pesticide or heavy metals. It's been very difficult for the growers who grow organically because when you're an outdoor organic grower, you're using things like fish emulsion, bat guano, chicken mulch. And all of this, which is in all of your food, hopefully, whether you're buying at the grocery store, it's going to be grown organically like that. So when they compound the plant, even though it might be 0.05, it's still going to fail. So it's been very hard for the organic growers to live in the marketplace and not have to adjust their crops. Like we were failing over and over again because our grow had a dog And though the dog wore a flea medicine, and somehow because the dog would, you know, run through the plants or whatever, that flea medicine got on somewhere, okay? And when it was concentrated down to it, I literally failed. And remember, we're talking about a $1,000 test on a 0.01 for a non-harmful product that's in your home every day if you have a pet. So we had to go all the way back. We had to reprocess. We had to, like, you know, jump through hoops and do the whole testing again.
So your quality control has to be greater than a pharmaceutical company.
There is no FDA approval for cannabis, and we don't want that to happen, because once that happens, all of the little startup people that you're talking about, all the people who are listening to this who are like, let's start a cannabis company, are all going to be dead in the water, because once it's an FDA approved and it's actually considered a medicine, which is a double-edged sword because it truly is a medicine, but it should be available to all of us, then it will be regulated by the FDA and we will no longer be able to produce it. So there is a lot. This industry is not for the weak at heart. It doesn't matter if you have a Harvard education and, like, you grew up, you know, globetrotting. If you are not gritty and you do not know how to roll through the dirt to achieve your dream, you will spend all your money and have nothing.
So as an entrepreneur, tongue twister, you know, it's easy to want to give up in a normal or regulated field. How many times have you really wanted to give up, and what keep going?
I'd say every day, right? Okay. I mean, I'd say that every, mm-hmm. I have come to Jesus's regularly with myself. I have had to bob and weave, duck and cover, reinvent. I have had my bank account seized. I have had mail seized. Mm-hmm. I have had every terrible thing. I've had ATF at my house. I've had all of it. So I've had lots of desire to quit, and why am I doing this? And what keeps me in the game is my business model is we are 100% medicinal. Mm-hmm. We don't do any recreational products at all. Mm-hmm. So I see on a daily basis people's lives improving. I watch people live longer with life-threatening illnesses. I see and witness children who have been seizuring 300 times a day stop seizuring. And that is what keeps my freaking ass in this game and sends me back to the table. And I've pounded the dirt and cried a lot and, like, beat my chest and want out every day. But, you know, it's insanely rewarding to know that you're making an actual contribution into the world.
Mm-hmm. So for someone who's looking to get into any business, right, less this business, what would you say to keep in mind to keep them going? Right.
Well, I would first ask yourself, why do I want to be in the cannabis space?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like and really have a serious, unadulterated, honest conversation with yourself. Mm-hmm. And if you come down to it's cool and I want to make a lot of money, it's not cool and you're not going to make any money.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, mm-hmm. go get high.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that what I want to talk about is that we're talking about the legal cannabis space,
mm-hmm.
and we have another probably 10 to 15 years of, like, the Wild West.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to encourage entrepreneurial people who are really interested in the medicine component of it, because if you want to go crunch numbers and you want to play the stock market, then you have ArcView. That's a great place to, you know, like, go and see what's available to make some money that way. Super safe. Don't get your hands dirty. You know, there's four or five stocks that started as pennies that are now in the dollars. So, you know, there's room in the cannabis space to make money like that for sure. But if you are somebody who is passionate about the plant and you want to make a product, then make your product and take care of your family and friends and hone your product and create your brand and find out all that you can about your product. Don't put it on Facebook and sell it, you know, like, don't get yourself in trouble, but find your network, because there's nothing but people who need help. There's nothing but people who are sick. And if you are drawn to this plant, it's drawn to you. And that's what I say if you're that kind of an entrepreneur. Don't stop just because it's daunting and it's impossible to, you know, handle it legally. Don't worry about it. If your product is excellent and you really take care of it and you really grow it up into something, then they're going to come looking for you. This is what I tell the, you know, the people I coach, like, make an excellent product, serve your community, and it will stand for itself. And then the bigger fish will come. Like right now in California, there's this particular company that is out there just buying every single black market company it can get its hands on, because the black market is so much stronger and it's producing better products because of the regulation. It's stopping the quality of care. And, you know, it's a whole other topic. But anyway, so their solution is just to buy everything they can possibly buy. And then when it's national, they pretty much own the world.
And yet your lettuce can get through.
Yeah, your lettuce can get through? What do you mean?
Like your vegetables, your fruits and vegetables will pass any inspection.
Oh, yeah,
with
right.
Massive amounts of whatever.
Exactly. If you were spending your money on organic produce, you're a fool. Find your farmer's market. Go there. Or yet be radical and plant your own plants in the dirt and grow your own garden. Because that is a radical action. The more you take care of yourself, the less you need the big government, and the healthier you're going to be.
So
thank you.
Here's the sort of blanket question. Is cannabis, is it legal in the U.S.?
No.
Loaded.
It is not legal in the collective federal government, no. So if you are in California and you are flying to Colorado and you think you could take your weed with you, man. Now, TSA says on their website, we're not looking for drugs. But if you're an asshole and you think you can smoke in the airport, you can trust and believe your ass is getting arrested. So, no, you cannot move product from state to state. It is illegal. You must be in a legal state. You must be within the structure of what law is presented to you, or else you're breaking the law, man.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. So it's not legal on a nationwide, which means under federal law.
Let's use the word federal. Yeah.
Yeah. When you look nationwide, federal laws cover nationwide, and it's not legal under federal laws. Is it legal in any states, and if so, how many?
I think it's 28 states that are legal now.
Is New York one of
them? Okay.
Yes. I mean, they were selling weed in Washington Park today, so, I mean, come on. Like, I was like, so there were two, there was, Washington Park was full of people selling weed, and I was like, what are you selling? CBD? What are you selling? Like that fake weed stuff? Oh, no, man, we're selling actual bud. Look at our nugs and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, what are you doing? And they're like, we're just doing it, man. We could do it. I'm like, you don't have to have – I was blown away. No permit, no nothing. There were cops walking all over the square. Like, there was – like, I was like, you're joking, right? Like, really? And they're like, hey, no, you want to try this right now? You want to fire up? And I'm like, oh, I'm going to pass on that. But, you know, it was interesting because I met two different entrepreneurs, both women. And one was super, don't take my picture, and I don't want to talk to you, right? And the other one was like, here I am, here's my website, I'm all about this, I want it, you know. So that right there shows you where the industry is at. Two people standing next to each other. One is like, I know I'm selling weed, but don't tell no one, okay? And the other one is like, I know I'm selling weed, and I'm telling everyone. Neither one of them legal,
right.
Neither one of them licensed. Both of them lying about products that they had, saying that they had made them. And that's the other thing in the industry that is so dangerous.
Okay.
And what makes it?
All right. So.
Sorry, Ted. I just asked what makes it dangerous for people to lie and say that they made their own stuff.
Well, it's mimicking branding, right? So it's the same no matter what. So I have a product, you know, I have to carry product liability and responsibility and all this kind of blah, blah on that and insurance. And then someone goes, oh, hey, that's a cool label. I'm going to slap that on my stuff. And then they mimic my product, but let's say they're using garbage and, you know, someone dies. So, yeah, it's licensing a product. So that's the problem with it.
Ted, you were going to ask?
No, keep going.
Uh, Oh, Ted's out of work.
Are we like boring you, Ted? Like, is this like, you know, you're not going to make any money, so you're like, yeah, fuck it. I don't want to hear that. You know, Ted, I'll tell you, since you want to talk about, like, let's talk about financial opportunity, because I know that you're that guy, and, you know, you like to find an opportunity. So the art
well,
view
wait,
group.
Wait, before we go to financial opportunities, I know Colorado was the first state to make it legal in that state, correct?
They were the first state to make it recreational, which is different.
Okay. So let's talk about that first before we get to this. So I think people need to understand that. So they are the first state to make it recreational. So when you say 28 states, that does that mean not all 28 states are recreationally legal? They may only be medically
yes.
legal.
Yes.
Okay. So that's
most
different.
Are medical.
So, and I assume those people yes. you saw in Washington, was it Washington Square Park or Bryant Park?
Yeah. It was Washington Square Park.
Washington Square. Well, they've always been selling weed there, plus some other things, but that's a different topic.
Like, I know that, but they've been standing on the corner digging it out of their pocket. These people had tables and signs and banners and websites, okay?
Whoa.
So it was like, that's what I'm talking about. Not like, oh, hey, man, I'm selling weed. Come stand over here.
No,
it was like a farmer's market for weed. I was like, what is going on here?
No kidding. And did you
yes,
ask them
jars
if they had
of
a license?
Rolls, buds, edibles.
So what's the difference?
You know, it was mind-blowing to me. It was absolutely mind-blowing. And like I said, one of them was real like, don't take my picture. No, you can't interview me. And I just like, you know, this is my Instagram. Everybody knows about us. I was like, everybody knows about you? I don't know about you, and I know everything in the cannabis industry. You know, and she was like, well, you should know about us. And I was like, less than 1% of 1% of 1% know who you are. Because you're standing here in Washington Square Park selling your shit, girl. No one knows you. Oh, I said a bad word. I'm sorry.
And they had no license. Do they have a license?
No, they had no license. They had no paperwork. They had nothing.
So some people are exploiting it, even in the face of you said you need all this money.
Well, I don't know. Are they exploiting it or they're just taking it? I mean, you know, good for them. That's what I say, you know. And no, like there were cops walking all over Washington Square Park. It wasn't like a mystery what was happening. They were right out there in the front.
Right.
So I'd say that they're – yeah, I think that it's – I mean, I think that what would be wonderful for the cannabis industry if it was federally decriminalized.
Mm-hmm.
It just needs to be decriminalized. It doesn't need to be legalized. It's a freaking plant. Like I told you in the beginning of this conversation, my grandmother cut it wild with a machete. So it grows on every continent all over the world. There's not one, there's no dirt where it doesn't, it's a weed, exactly, where it doesn't grow. Not one. So it just needs to be decriminalized, not legalized. And that is where the big conversation in Washington is at. But like we said earlier today, you know, this industry is owned not just by the tobacco industry. It is also owned by the pharmaceutical company because cannabis has been known to not only combat cancer, it also combats and alleviates chronic pain, making painkillers obsolete. And it restores your body when you're doing chemotherapy. So you don't die from chemo treatment. You actually get better. So it's a big threat to everyone of those industries because of the impact that it can make.
Okay. All right. So let's say I have the money in the bank. I get my license. And I want to open a retail shop. That's a different kind of license, I assume, right?
Yeah, that's a very different kind of license.
Okay, so I just get a small place, I have a great location in a city, and I'm now operating a retail shop. I don't make my own products, so what does that mean? I need to find a bunch of distributors?
It means that you need to find a distributor who's going to bring you your products.
Right.
That means you and Robin have to talk later.
No.
Well, someone I met here in Jersey said that he was working in California, and this is what I'm getting at. It's like these are all cash transactions. These are, can you wire money? Can you use like Cash App and or what is it, Venmo or something?
Venmo.
Can you?
PayPal,
can you
Venmo,
use that?
Cash App.
You want me to Cash App you, Ted? What are you going to give me? What am I getting from you?
What you got?
No. I'm giving you money. You need to give me something. If I'm Cash Apping you.
What do you want? So, but can you use...
No, I believe that... I believe all states are cash transactions, which is what you're talking about. So we are working diligently in the cannabis space to create banking and to create a point of sale so we are not housing hundreds of thousands of dollars a day.
Okay.
And every dollar
is
counted. Like, you have to count every single dollar through a counting machine, like a casino, with a camera on it.
Oh, interesting. So the gentleman was telling me a story that in California, that when if let's say I was buying products from you, and maybe I'm spending $30,000, this is all cash. I'm meeting you someplace. He said you actually need to consider security because sometimes deals go bad.
Yes, you have to travel. I have been the person who is traveling with $30,000, $50,000. Yes, yes. And then you have to bring all that product back. Then you have, 50 to 100 pounds of plant material, which takes up volume. It's a space. It takes space. And you have to have a license to transport it. So you can't take $30,000 on a plane. You have to drive with it. So you're a pain in the ass.
Right, and that's what he was telling me. He said, so his client, he was security, his client gives him the $30,000 of cannabis. He goes and meets the buyer somewhere in California, and they all have guns. And they make the exchange, and they drive, and there's more than one car.
He works for a much more exciting organization than I've ever been part of. I mean, I've never seen a freaking gun, and I've moved hundreds of pounds of flour. So I don't know. He had a much different experience. Most transactions are done between farmers who aren't really carrying guns, and the pickup people. I think that he was a good storyteller, honestly, because I've never seen a gun in my life in the cannabis industry. I am sorry, and I'm sure there are people carrying guns, but that's not the norm. But, of course, but you do have people with guns for sure in your – like, let's say that you opened your – let's say you opened your dispensary, Ted, and you were very successful.
Right.
So you would have to build your dispensary in a way that you could take all of your product off the shelf every single night at the end of it, and then you would have to put it into a safe.
Like a jewelry store.
And all of your money that you made would have to be in a different safe. So you would definitely want to have somebody, who could fire a gun in the vicinity of all of that.
Interesting.
Or you're in a really good mood.
So you do, you're going to have security or someone who understands security.
I would say
both. Firearm.
You have to have an in-place security system that rings to the police. In fact, I just got fined by my insurance company because mine does not ring to the police. So pissed because nobody does anymore. Now they're all connected to your telephones, right? They don't even the security company, the old school security companies that would come and do your security and all that kind of stuff, they're like obsolete. Everything's on your phone. So I got fined because I don't have that. And I'm like, how do I get around this? And they're like, well, we don't really know how you get around it, but we're still fining you. And we're not going to cover you. So if you get broken into, we're not covering you. Because now you don't ring. Yeah, now you don't ring to the police. What? Are you kidding me?
Okay, so if I have my retail shop and you're the grower and I want to buy $30,000 of product, I need to drive to your farm, give you $30,000, and you give me several pounds.
I will drive in my regulated car from my farm with the cage. I will put my flower into a cage, and I will drive it down the highway to you. And so California is particular because they put the cost of everything on the grower, all right? So because there's no cash trends, it's really difficult to do that kind of a cash transaction that you're talking about, right? The law states that me, the grower, legally has to give you the plant product to sell, and you can pay me on a 30 to 60 day net. Terrible
okay.
for the grower. Terrible.
So I don't give you. This is no COD, then. I don't give you cash when you deliver it.
You don't have to if you don't want to.
Right.
You say, you know what, we don't do that. We're going to make you wait 60 days on this. I can't say, I can say no to you, but then I'm not going to get anybody else to give me to buy my product.
Right.
Because everybody can do that to me.
So, okay. So let's say I say, I'll pay you in 30 days. I love your product. I want to keep purchasing from you. So that means you just delivered $30,000 in product, and in 30 days I'm going to drive to you and hand you $30,000 in cash, correct?
Hopefully. Yeah, that's the plan.
No,
but it doesn't happen very often, and growers get ripped off a lot, and that's why the buddies with the guns come in. So, you know, that's the law, that's the legal way to do it. But there are people who are, you know, COD for sure, who have had that. I mean, I know so many growers that have been just, you know, muffled out by that thing right there. And they've been working to change that component of the law because it's not fair to them. But that's the deal, is kill the grower and you kill the chain of command. So if my
right.
growers go down and they can't grow anymore, I can't make any more products. So I'm immediately dead. Like they're not interested
right.
in the end line like me.
Well, and that's why I'm going to actually give you your $30,000, because in 60 days I'm going to buy another $30,000, right? So
yeah, well, you're a good guy.
I just want to say,
back in business.
I didn't hear you.
We're back in business, but let's say that at your dispensary you wanted to have some topicals or some edibles. Now, those you have to pay me when I deliver them.
Okay. But
so
the
just
actual
the flower
cannabis,
you don't have to pay me. The actual cannabis
okay,
you can
so the,
take up to 60 days to pay me.
Okay, all right. So so in 30 days, I'm now going to, because I'm not mailing this, I'm going to go to your farm and give you $30,000 in cash, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Or I'm going to meet you somewhere on the highway and you're going to give me that money. You know?
Okay, right. And you're going to have your cousin Tony with a gun, right? I got it.
Yeah,
so,
I'm going to be Nate. And you know what? He is going to have a gun. That's funny.
So, but wait.
I'm taking this
somewhere so it can be understood. So now you have $30,000 in cash, and what are you going to do? Go just deposit that in the bank?
I'm going to go to the casino. What are you going to do?
And double it.
No, hopefully. Hopefully, Lori's going to Gucci. I'm going to the casino. We don't know where you're going. You pick. Anyways, exactly. Spending your investment, buddy. No, I am going to take it back to my store, and I am going to. Well, now I can put it in the bank, okay? So I can pay my employees, because because you are going to have to, you the business owner, are going to have employees. And they're going to have to be like you know, that whole thing that employees have to be.
Payroll taxes,
all of that, workers' comp, and all of that. So
right,
there's
right.
more
you're the grower.
You.
You're the farmer. You're the farmer. So
I'm the farmer.
You're
I take
growing.
My money back. I'm going to go stick it in my safe. I'm going to go to the casino. I'm going to eat my, you know, my little vegetarian meal. I'm going to, you know, dig the hole in the backyard and stick the rest of it under there. Oh, yeah. I mean, I know growers. Okay, so here's just an appropriate story. So I have a really – I have a grower who I'm very good friends with who house fire, unfortunately. They had $250,000 in a safe because that's the only – and this is a legally made money. This is not illegally made money. It is legally made money. So because they can't take it to a bank, this is like kind of early on. This is around 2017, somewhere in there. And they can't take it to the bank. So they have $250,000 in cash on their property on a safe that burns to the ground, melts, and all of their money is gone.
Well, see, that's why I asked. So I give you $30,000. You're the grower. Can you put it in the bank? Because, like you said, you have employees. So are you legally allowed to put that $30,000?
Yes, I am allowed to put it in the bank. I am allowed to put it in the bank. Mm-hmm.
Is that
a
new law?
I can put it in the bank. I can put it in the bank to pay my payroll. I can put it in the bank to pay. I have a structure of what I can pay with. I cannot put it in the bank to buy more seed, to buy more dirt, to buy more water, to do anything that is part of the farm. I can only put it in the bank to pay the other components, like the people and the building and the electricity.
Interesting.
It's
really
very complicated. It's very complicated, and it's very complicated. And then also the way that you pay. So me, the grower, I'm going to get taxed a couple times on my crop. I have to take my crop down. I have to do a wet weight. I have to weigh the crop on what it weighs wet. And then I have to, log it and all of that. And then I have to clean my crop, and I have to weigh that. And I have to log it. And then I have to dry my crop, and then I have to weigh that. And then when I sell my crop, there has to be a certain percentage from the wet weight to the dry weight, or else I'm flagged. And who made up that percentage? Somebody at the EPA who decided this is what plants weigh wet, this is what plants weigh dry.
Okay.
So this is how, in the metric, how they try to guarantee that you are paying your tax. And here's the other beautiful thing as a grower. So I grew these beautiful plants. We take them down. Before, I would get all my buddies and their girlfriends and their boyfriends and whoever I could get to come over, and they'd sit around a big table, smoke a bunch of weed, and trim up a bunch of buds. All right? Now, legally, after I cut my crop down, I'm not allowed to touch it. I have to take it, I have to move it in a car to another location to have another group of people that I have to pay to trim it, and they're going to bag and tag it.
Oh, interesting. Okay. And let's suppose I want to invest $1 million in your farm. So I'm an investor. You'd like to expand your farm. Business is going well, and I'd like to invest. So I drop $1 million. In 3 years, you return my money. I've got back in 3 years, I've got just keep it simple. You gave me $1.5 million back in 3 years. Are there any restrictions because I invested in the cannabis industry on my money, on the profits?
Well, you're not allowed to invest in the cannabis industry at that level, and you cannot take your money to Schwab and put it in there, and you can't do anything in the legal market. No. So, no. The answer is no. So you're going to get your investment back. You're going to be super happy. You're going to put it in your safe, which hopefully won't melt in your house fire, and find another way to invest it, because you cannot take income. This is such backwards baloney. You cannot take income that you earn in the cannabis industry and put it into the space of an investment house. They will not take your money.
Now, what about my initial $1 million? Is that still constrained by the law?
Let's say you went to Schwab and said, I have $1 million that I earned in the cannabis industry.
No, it's not a million I earned. So I had $1 million in the bank, and I wrote you a check. I don't even know if you can take checks. I don't have to give you $1 million in cash, do I?
You can do a wire transfer amongst banks.
Okay.
No check.
So
yeah.
I'm wired.
All of your money, every single dollar of your $1 million would have to be accounted for in this in the structure of the farm.
Okay. All right. And so it's all legal. It's all legit. You needed the $1 million. You bought more land. You bought equipment, whatever. You used it for working capital, and your business is thriving. You grew exponentially because of that $1 million investment. And in 3 years, you give me 1.5. So now I have my initial $1 million back. I assume you'll wire transfer 1.5 to me, yes or no?
Yes.
My initial $1 million is back in a bank. The bank, they saw that before. It's back after 3 years. But it's this point, it's this $500,000 that I have, that's going to come into question, and Charles Schwab won't take that.
Charles Schwab is not taking that $500,000. No.
But they'll take the million.
You also
though,
can
use
it to buy insurance for yourself, like life insurance. Like these are my everyday problems. You have no idea how me and my investment banker have to have these very clever conversations about how to handle our revenue, our income, you know, because I make money, but I can't go to an investment house and say, okay, I made $100,000 or $1 million or whatever, or $6. Can I put it in the stock market? They'll say no. No, you cannot. It's money made from cannabis. It's not federally legal. Go home and put it in a safe that doesn't burn to the ground. And you say, okay. And then you go to the casino. Because that's what the cannabis industry is, a crapshoot.
And then you want to quit. And then you say, I'm helping people and I'll keep the struggle.
Okay. So we're about to run out of time.
Yes, we have an exciting and interesting conversation. Thank you, Robin. So do you want to tell people how to reach you again?
You can Google my name, okay. robinswan.com, or firebirdtouchtherapy.com, bluebuddhacbd.com, or happydogmedicinals.
Thank you so much. And we had a little glitch last week, and the show did not go off. So we have our guest next week, Brian Highfield. So tune in for next week. We'll see you Thursday night at 7 o'clock. Thank you, Ted. It was great to speak to you.
Thanks, Ted.
Yeah.
Thank you, Robin.
Great
so
show.
Much.
Thanks, Robin. Thank you. Have a great evening, everyone. Take care.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.